Hey everyone, this is TechCrunch Live, where we help founders build better venture-backed businesses. I'm Matt Burns, and I promise you, you're going to love this event today. I have Vanessa Larco, a partner at NEA, and Dion Nicholas, co-founder and CEO of Forefront AI, and they promised not to get rowdy today, which basically means they're going to get rowdy today, so I'm here for it. They have a great working relationship, as I found out during some prep calls, and we're going to use that to pull out some learnings and then some advice on building founder-investor relationships, but also talk about product launch timing and winning a startup competition. Because Forefront AI won Startup Battlefield at TechCrunch Disrupt in 2018. I remember that one well, and I just watched the pitch again, and it was fantastic. I'm thrilled that they're on the show today. But first, a couple of things. One, this is our last show on Hopin. You can watch this event on Twitter and YouTube and Facebook Live, but also Hopin, where you can apply for pitch practice and ask questions and network with other guests. But next week, we're switching to Grip. And what that means for you is one registration, and it automatically gets you into all of TechCrunch's events. So you don't have to re-register every week, because I know that was quite a pain. Second, we're changing how we're applying for pitch off. Next week, the day of the event, I'm going to publish a form, and you can go online and you can put in, you can take your time and you can apply nicely and get into pitch practice. And that'll allow you to join the fun a whole lot easier. And if you've already participated in pitch practice, please apply again. I would love to see these same companies come back with the learnings and present their new and improved pitch. And last thing, next month is all about robotic startups. That's because we're hosting a one-day event, Sessions Robotics, on July 21st. So the first two shows of the month are all going to be about robotics. So with that said, I'm all done with my announcements. Let's bring on Vanessa and Dion. Hi guys, how are you?
Hey.
Good to be here. How are you?
Good. Well, thanks for doing this. This is really exciting. I think, Dion, you're the first company we've had from winning Startup Battlefield in this spot.
Oh my goodness. I'm honored. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, it's great. You won in 2018. I went back and I watched your pitch again, and it was very smooth. You're a great communicator. It was a great pitch. What do you remember about that event?
It was a lot of fun. I will say it was a lot of fun. And there was a lot of prep that went into TechCrunch Disrupt. We launched in September 2018, and we had found out we had gotten in back in May. And so between May and September, there was just a lot we did to prepare our pitch, think about our business. And also, most importantly, we kind of made this call that nothing mattered. It didn't matter if we got on stage, none of that mattered unless we had a product that delivered value for customers. And so we spent a lot of time just like trying to meet and sign up our first few customers in pilot. So that those were the things I remember. And then stage fright. And then it went okay.
Yeah, it's a big stage. Yeah, and I don't want this to be a shameless plug or anything, but we have changed the program a little bit, and now we're accepting 200 companies into it. So please apply for this. Everyone else out there, it's a great program. Now, when I went back and I watched your final presentation with the final judges, the big important VCs, they talked a lot about a competitive market, and you launched into a competitive space. How did you navigate around those competitors at the time?
Oh, very good question, Matthew. So one of the things that my co-founder Sammy and I realized when we were in the early innings of building this product was one that we had real technological innovation and an inflection point in things like natural language understanding that were starting to happen, both in the research we were doing as well as in the broader community. And two, when we started talking to customers, the feedback we were getting was very different than the feedback we were getting from investors. Every investor was like, hey, this is a crowded space. There's a ton of competitors here. And when we talked to customers, they were like, yeah, but we still have a huge problem and nobody solved it for us. And when you see something like that, that is actually an opportunity because you can ask why. And the realization for us was that the technology, the kind of last generation of chatbots had been just overpromised and underdelivered. And so that was actually an exhilarating kind of opportunity for us.
Yeah. When you did your pitch, you're an AI company, but you didn't use the word AI at all during the pitch. You're smiling at that. So why was that? Why lack of buzzwords?
Because they were buzzwords, right? And so a lot of, for customers as well as judges, The word AI had almost become a swear word, so to speak, right? Because everyone was using it, but most artificial intelligence was way more artificial than intelligent, right? And so we were focused a lot on what is the value we're bringing to the customer? What is the value we're bringing for humans and people at the end of the day and the problem we're solving for them? And yes, AI is going to be an advantage, but we let our results kind of do the talking, so to speak. And now we've started to, I think the market has come around to what that actually means.
Sure. Now, Vanessa, I need to bring you in here. What I want to hear your perspective on ForethoughtIQ's launch timing.
It was fascinating because they were coming in when a wave of these like chatbots and new age customer support companies were either plateauing or like precipitously declining. Mm-hmm. And so the mood was a little bit like, oh, we've heard this before and right. None of these companies really broke out. And so he was coming into a bit of a, it's like the category had become a little unpopular right when he was like, hey, look what I'm doing.
Best time to build.
Yeah, it's true, right? So it was at the time, like a non-obvious bet to bet in a market that, people had lost a lot of money in very recently. But what we found was what Dion said. We talked to our portfolio companies that were at scale and talked about what problems are you having in support. And this was a very acute problem. But what I'd say that was the best part is they had a bigger vision beyond that. So they were like, we want to build this technology that solves this problem that people have today, and we can solve it really well. But we can apply what we've built to other types of problems that are adjacent and build it out that way. So it was, there was like a really good timing for customer problem solution fit, and then a really big ambitious vision that you could get really excited about. And also showed you just how Dion and Sammy thought about like what these technical innovations could unlock. So it was, I think, a really great opportunity. And then there was obviously really good founder investor chemistry, which I think is pretty important.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Dion, you said it was the best time to build. What do you mean by that?
I'm semi-contrarian when it comes to technology hype cycles, right?
Semi?
Very contrarian when it comes to technology hype cycles. Like even when you think about, I don't know, this isn't really about crypto, but crypto is a good example of it, right? Like there in the early days, there's a ton of hype around it. And usually hype is a bad thing in the short term, but it's indicative of some place you can go in the long term. And then you get into this, you know, trough of disillusionment where everyone, like the hype dies down. But that's when the people who are super passionate about the thing are actually quietly building, right? Bill Gates, I think this quote is attributed to, once said, you know, we overestimate what we can do in a year, but underestimate what we can achieve in a lifetime, right? And I think that's always true about new technological waves. And so for AI and natural language understanding, I had been thinking about these problems to some degree pretty much my entire life. And in and around 2017, so before we launched, about a year before we launched, there were a ton of new innovations, a lot of things we were working on. Chris Manning, who's a Stanford professor who literally wrote the book on NLP that I read in school. He was one of my advisors and is one of ForethoughtIQ's advisors and investors now. A lot of stuff coming out of his lab. And so it was about the time where just focusing on building and solving the problem would actually yield fruit. And we could see that viscerally. There was just a lot going on there. And so we were like, let's get focused on the problem. Let's go solve it. While everyone else actually is probably off doing like crypto stuff, right? And so, you know, less competition and so on and so forth. So we were starting to see some really interesting synergies there.
Yeah, I think there is a lot of parallels between what you were doing chatbots and AI in 2015 to 2018, that window, and right now with Web3 from 2019 to current, right? What do you say to founders about finding the right time to launch their product?
So timing is really important. I think it's hard to get timing right. So, you know, there's no exact science, but what I would actually say is ignore the hype and focus on problems, right? And that was always acutely true for me. I've been thinking about how can AI help people get their most important questions answered for a long time. There's a few stories out there about me trying to think about how can AI help me study for history class back in the day.
Or do your homework for you.
Well, hey, you know, I mean,
right.
you gotta have some more time somewhere. But, like, and it was just like, you can't control the timing, but you can control the problems and the insights you start to generate. And then at some point you will find, and this is where quote unquote founder market fit comes from, you'll find that you have insights into a problem, into a space that other people have simply because they weren't looking, right? And so I think that's almost the only advice I can have is just focus on a problem you can't get out of your head and you'll eventually think about how to solve it.
And thoughts on this, Vanessa?
I think that's right. I think the one thing he didn't emphasize, but it's core to the company is customer feedback. Like, what is the actual problem the customer has? How do we solve it for them in a way that shows ROI actually fairly quickly? Mm-hmm. And having those tight feedback loops, right? Like you deploy it, you get feedback, you see how people are using it, you iterate, you push out those updates, you iterate again until that the customer can clearly themselves communicate what benefit they're getting from this software. For me, like when alarm bell, like confetti shoots out when the customer can like in one sentence say why they love the software or why they can't do their job without it in a sentence or two. If they have to fumble around and think through it and can't properly articulate it, I think most software actually falls in that camp. But sure. When they can articulate it really quickly, you know you have something special.
Right. Yeah. Well, let's take a look at your pitch deck. You brought up your 2018 pitch deck, right?
Absolutely. The 2018 pitch deck. Before we jump in, I just wanted to tell a story that is like pretty infamous nowadays. So going back to the kind of customer feedback, Vanessa's laughing, I can tell.
she said in the chat is nightmare.
but that customer feedback was super crucial. So Sammy and I, we started by, there was a technological problem that we had to know whether we can solve and de-risk. And we spent a lot of time kind of doing the research. But once we had done the research and kind of proven to ourselves that it was possible, we spent the rest of our time focused on customers, right? And I still remember to this day, like in the very, very early days, like our NPS was -24. There was like a question of like, is it even possible to have negative NPS? Do you remember that one? And you know, we spent time with the customers. We like figured it out and all of those things. And there's this iterative process of learning and focusing on the problem. And our, you know, our customers love us and there's the rest is history. But I do think it's just fun to reminisce on that whole process of putting customers first and finding product market fit.
So yeah, I say nightmares because I'm a former product person and I pride right. myself in investing in like beautiful, easy to use products. And so when Dion like showed us a demo, I'm like, oh, this like works. It's really cool technology. Like, obviously this can't be the interface they launch with. And then they did. And the NPS came back. I was like, oh no, we need a product designer. We need to work on this because in most cases, like yeah, the buyer and the end user are two different people. And sometimes the people that use your product, your early cohorts may get a lot of value, but your later cohorts, your more experienced people, you know, if you don't have a lot of depth, maybe they get disillusioned. So really understanding your buyer and your end user and their motivations, and then making sure that you design the product in a way that they can easily adopt. We hadn't thought through like those specific details at launch.
Sure.
And it was
janky. Come on, it was janky, but it was great. It was great.
Speaking of Net Promoter Score and everything and beautiful design, right? Let's take a look at the pitch deck. It's I'll be honest with you, Dion. It's not the prettiest thing.
To be honest, when I pulled it up for this session, I literally cringed. I was like, man, this is back in the day. This is the Series A pitch deck. I will say we've rebranded. Everything is great. Go to www.forethought.ai and we have a great story. But it was definitely not well designed back in the day.
Well, I was hoping you could walk through a couple of quick points here, right? This starts with your team. And I think the thing to take away on this slide is the logos.
Yeah, exactly. And I think like in the early days, especially when you're raising a seed or a Series A, the team really does matter. And you know, building credibility around that we are the kind of team that has that quote unquote founder market fit was really important. And so I had, as mentioned, published machine learning papers and things like that. Sammy is a genius and kind of graduated top of his class for both bachelor's and master's at Harvard in computer science and was like the youngest member of LinkedIn's machine learning team. And Colm, co-founder, early employee, was an enterprise search kind of veteran, right? And so we were definitely, when you pitch to investors, right, like for in the audience who's watching, like the team really does matter, and having the expertise and the credibility does matter as well.
Now, Vanessa, can you give a quick advice here? What if you're not top of your class at Harvard, or what if you don't have Palantir as a resume? What do you put there?
Yeah. So the question is like, what are previous accomplishments or experiences that increase the probability of this team being able to build a big company, build and scale a big company? And so, you know, if it's not Harvard and Waterloo, you know, did you have a role in something, right? If you're building a trucking company and you grew up in a trucking family business, like you have unique insights. If you were a third generation jeweler and you've seen your parents build jewelry stores, but they're fragmented, they don't scale, and you think the technology can make it better, higher margin, bigger distribution, right? Like there has to be something that, that tells the investor that you're the right person to solve this. And then we dig into a little bit about your motivations, why, cause it's going to be a non like up into the right path. There's going to be a lot of bumps, but we want to know that you're like super passionate and that you have the grit and endurance and passion to keep going through those times. Right. So if you played sports, like athletes sometimes tend to make great CEOs. So we kind of dig into like pull threads of like what traits and what accomplishments does this person have to point us in that direction.
That's great advice. Let's look at the next slide.
I will say that our key and core trait is that we love karaoke.
And that's clearly indicative of a high performing team.
This is how the world works. Sorry, carrying on, problem.
This is you, 38%.
Yeah. So it's interesting. And we've been talking about this, my team and I, like in the last week about how do you articulate the problem? How do you articulate why we're here? Today, I would say the real end goal of Forethought is really to drive efficiency, make things faster, bring intelligence to all of these human-centered workflows that are inherently broken, siloed, and so on and so forth, right? In the olden days, back in the Series A pitch, I wanted to describe, because at the time we actually only had one product and it was agent facing, right? It was internal facing. I wanted to acutely describe how much productivity and how much efficiency was being wasted. And this was actually also the first slide in my TechCrunch pitch. And then, you know, I start with just literally to like, this is the problem, right? You know, 38% of people's time are wasted. And so being able to accurately describe the problem is really, really critical.
Yeah. And I'll say this is interesting because everybody can relate to that, right? Like whether you're searching your email inbox or scouring your terrible intranet, trying to figure out like, where do I find this information? And so you see this and you're like, oh yeah, no, I believe it. You know, I experience it. And so it's easier to convert an investor when the problem is something that they can believe, wrap their head around, grasp pretty quickly. And so this was a really great way for everyone in the room to be like, yeah, we get it. We believe it. What's next? How are you going to address it?
Well, let's see. Next slide.
Why? This is a beautifully designed slide. I don't know why anybody's laughing.
It is such an engineering, like, this is, like, tell me the founder's an engineer without saying they're an engineer, like, show the slide.
Founder is an engineer. I do have a call out, Matthew. You originally said forefront at one point, forethought. Anyway, carrying on. So
No, quick story. I once interviewed the president of MasterCard and TransferWise at Davos, but I called a transfer wire for an hour straight.
Oh no.
Yeah. Up in the mountains in front of billionaires. Yeah. So I've done that before. My bad.
For what it's worth, I always write Dion's last name as Dion Nichols instead of Nicholas. And we've been like working together for 4 years.
Known so, you for so you know. Long. I don't even know. Like, are we even friends anymore? I don't know. So this one is it's one of my favorite slides. I mean, our modern, like we've come a long way, but the vision, right, is still pretty clear. And we don't describe it as information retrieval embedded into employee workflows. We actually describe it as the intelligence layer for the enterprise now, because we're doing more than just search and information retrieval problems. We're now
you hired a marketing person.
Yeah, exactly. Shout outs, Ryan Von Wagner. basically who completely transformed our story. But we have always had the vision that customer support is just one human business interaction, and it's just the beginning. If you can connect up the information, and this is often the leading edge of product information, this is where businesses know what's going well and what's going not through customer service and customer support. If you take the exact same stack and product and apply it to sales, right? Another kind of human-centered workflow, HR, IT, and so on, you can build what we're calling the intelligence layer for the enterprise, right? And it's very similar to how Salesforce, you know, they launched Sales Cloud, the system of record for salespeople. They scaled $1 billion IPO, yada, yada. And then they launched Service Cloud, which is an even bigger $1 billion business for customer support, Marketing Cloud, and so on and so forth. And so that was how they became the system of record for the enterprise. And I truly believe in this vision of using this fundamental AI technology, we can become the system of intelligence for the enterprise. So I've always started pretty broad with where I think we can go. And this isn't a 1 or 5 or 10 year vision, but it's a 20, 30, 50, 100 year vision, right? And so that's something that I've always felt really proud about. And I think a lot of people can get behind
it. Yeah, Vanessa, you're nodding your head a lot there. Do you agree?
Yeah, no. While this slide is, it's a janky schema, right? Like who puts a schema
it's
together?
It's literally a database schema. Yeah. UML diagram of the
exactly. But he just did such a great job explaining how do we get from here to there very tactically, and it became very believable. So I think people can have like big audacious goals and you can't draw the line from here to there, but when you can articulate it super clearly, then you can get behind that. You can get really excited and inspired by that as an investor.
Yeah. Do you prefer people to present short-term visions or this long-term forever thing?
Typically you want to get to the point of the short-term vision. Like what's the opportunity today? What are you building today? Who's your user today? What's that TAM? Cause you're going to underwrite that. So I would typically start there and then say like, once we dominate this kind of like what Dion articulated now, you can layer these things on. Like that gives you permission to tackle these other areas. If you start with like, these are all the areas I want to tackle, it's very easy for the investors to like immediately get into skeptical mode. And then you're working through skeptical mode the rest of your pitch.
And that's really important here. And this is actually something we always struggled with, right? Because there's like big vision, but you have to build credibility now. You have to solve a problem. No platform company, like let's say you're building an app store, you can't build the app store without the killer app. Right. And so oftentimes you have to focus on what is the killer app before you even think about the platform. And so one of my advisors once said, we have what you would call an hourglass pitch. I don't know. I didn't make it up. Start pretty broad. What we tend to do is start with the vision and then as quickly as possible, get into where we are today, spend most of the pitch on that. And then at the end, pull it back out again. You'll actually see this. The final slide is actually the same slide. And so that's pretty intentional.
Well, let's go to the next slide here.
All right. So pulling in the hourglass though, right? So we have the vision, zero credibility unless you can solve a problem today. And that's just like, it is the way it is. And we knew from the get-go, customer support organizations were going to be the place where we're going to have the most immediate impact. I don't actually tell this story a lot, but my first ever job was actually in customer service. I was stocking shelves at Shoppers Drug Mart, which is the Canadian CVS, answering customer calls, answering customer questions on the floor. And I've always kind of known that, like, I don't always have all the information as an agent, and my customers don't always know all the answers either as customers. And so it's always been kind of near and dear to my heart to focus on customer support. I think we also got incredibly lucky because customer support in and of itself as a market is going to be one of the first places that's tackled by AI. And there's a lot of reasons for that. But anyway, so we focused on that. We had a very clear, here is what our first product is. Here's its key value to agents, help agents become 30% more productive. And here's how we're going to do that.
Great. Next slide.
This is my favorite slide. Actually, I said that about my vision slide, so maybe I can't have, they're all my favorite slides.
You can have two favorites.
All right. I've got two favorite slides. Because again, going back to, and this is similar to what we, put, at TechCrunch Disrupt at Battlefield. When we found out we got into Battlefield again, we said like, you know, launching, it's going to be so much fun. It's exciting, but that's all vanity unless you can focus on delivering value for customers. And so we said there is going to be a slide on there with at least five customer logos. That was like our goal. That was like the whole goal for the rest of 2018. Didn't matter if we won or lost TechCrunch. It was, can we deliver enough value for five customers such that they, whether they were pilots or annual or whatever, can we deliver value such that they would be willing to let us mention them as potential customers or as pilots? And that was the thing we focused on. And then we ended up getting to, I think it's seven paid pilots at this period of time. And that was like the thing that we were most proud of, right? And that was the thing, I think that, or one of the things that when we launched, even though it was like an early stage, seed stage kind of launch or pitch competition, we were able to show just an amount of traction that was maybe just a step ahead of what a typical company at that stage would look like.
Absolutely. Now, Vanessa, you got a big smile on your face. As an investor, you must love this slide.
Well, what I love most about this slide is that one of the companies here, Masterclass, is a portfolio company that we work really closely with. Sure. And so I think one of the cheats that a founder can do is go after portfolio companies of investors that you want to pitch, because it's super easy for us to just, we're like, oh, we know that. Like, we don't have to like try to outreach and, you know, all this stuff to get references. We just like literally text the founder, like, hey, you guys using this? Oh yeah, my buddy is here. Let me like introduce you and hop on a call. Like, hey, what do you think? And they'll give you like the truth, right? It's not a scripted reference that Dion sent us. It's like someone we know that would give us the real scoop. And if they love it, then we get bullish really quickly. And so, you know, you can either target, or if you already have them, every time you pitch to an investor, pull out the logos that's in their portfolios and put those on there. That tends to be like 10x more effective than if it's logos of people like they can't easily reach.
Yeah, right? That's great advice. Now, what's the line of where you can put a logo on? Can you just submit an offer and they have a conversation and then put that logo on your slide deck? Or,
well, on our side, I mean, these were all customers who were using the product or in some way, shape or form, and we asked their permission, basically. So it's like, you know, if you're willing to be a rep or whatever it is, like that was basically it. And it's fun. And these are obviously very, very early pilots, but many of these are customers today. I think we have Thumbtack is one of our kind of largest customers. And it's just fun to see how these customers grow with you over time and stuff like that. So it's pretty exciting. And I think, again, we say at our company, one of our values is put customers first. And it's one of those kind of ingrained into our culture that nothing matters except kind of what you're delivering to the customer. But such a fun kind of lesson, I think. And yeah, happy to.
And apparently karaoke too, that matters too.
Oh, absolutely. Like that. Yeah. Sorry. That's number one. I should have had a slide on this for that, but alas, it was 2018. That's the most cringeworthy part about this deck is that it doesn't mention karaoke.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, let's look at a couple more here.
Yeah, the one thing I would add to the logo thing is don't put a logo on there of a customer that's unhappy, or if it's, and if you're putting a logo of a customer who's in the pipeline and hasn't converted, you still want to ask the customer for permission, and you want to set expectations with the investor and say they're in our pipeline or they're early in their pilot, so that they know if they text them or call them up, the information matches. Because if it doesn't match, that almost kills the deal entirely, because there's mistrust that brews.
Now, one question on that. I've had a couple investors say to provide printed or detailed feedback right from the company with the slide deck in an appendix. Do you prefer that? Raise your eyebrows a little bit.
That's interesting. No.
You want to have your own conversation.
I have to do my job, right? My job is to figure it out what's actually happening. And so even for the references the companies give you, I always try to find back channel references, unscripted ones. And so if you have logos on there and they weren't the reference, you better believe I'm going to like scour LinkedIn, see who I know there that can introduce me to someone who might be using it. And I'm going to hop on a call. It's my job as an investor.
I like that answer better. Great. Well, let's look at this number slide.
Okay, so this is my favorite slide on
this. You can't do that again. Max two.
All right, I take it back. But no, I mean, so once you've kind of shown, hey, like team, right? Traction, vision, product, problem. All right, how are you solving this, right? And so talking about the numbers, the ROI, how we're able to reduce, you know, time to resolution or improve answer one touch deflections or things like that. That's when you start getting into the hard, you know, ROI and things like that. And you can start opening up questions around pricing and how much you're able to charge and how much your value you're able to create, which can then, when the inevitable market sizing questions come up, you can help answer that by doing simple like, yeah, you know, the average customer can pay us X. We think there are Y, many of them. X times Y is this. Oh, like, you know what, there's like a reasonable market here. And that's a good place to start, right? Kind of bottom up. And so that can be really helpful. And that's kind of why we had this slide in here.
Yeah,
I love this because it's a throwback. So back in the day, 2018, you cared about the value the customer provides, right? In a very tactical way. Like it's like value-based pricing almost, right? Dion can charge up to 30% of the spend of agents. Somewhere along the way, we've gotten away from that. And people are like, we priced it at X because customers are willing to pay it. And we build, and not every customer is going to pay us as much. And then they build up the TAM that way. And we stopped asking like, well, why are they paying that much? Are they saving that money? Are they ripping something else out? And it's because everybody just had a lot of money. So it's like, oh, we told them 25K. They said, okay. And so that's our price. I'm like, all right. But now in this environment, we got to go back to that. Like we have to go back to how are you justifying, how are customers going to justify budget for this? How does the price make sense? Are you saving money? Are you ripping something out? Like it has to add up to, it has to be grounded and anchored on something that is value-based. So this slide is great because it used to be the norm. And then in like the last 3 years, I haven't seen this slide very often. Sure. And we have to be asking about this. So these slides have to be included in any pitch from now and hopefully forever. So I'm very passionate about this.
No, that's great. And I think it's really unique. You two have a very good working relationship. And I'm curious how often you talk.
So we have a recurring call, like any board members. We have our quarterly board meetings, where I get yelled at by that non-plan. So I think good board management, maybe I'll be like super formal about it, is like making sure that the problems that are on your mind are actually the ones that get addressed. Cause I think in the regular check-ins, like it's good for rhythm and like pulling the management team together and just kind of stopping and checking in on your core metrics. But in any given day to day, like the things we're trying to solve or the things that are most important to me are like, hey, I'm trying to figure out how to manage this team or this whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to learn about product market fit. My NPS is low. Like there's pretty, you know, day-to-day things. And so we chat pretty often about all that. And you recently moved, Vanessa, to like pretty near where my house is. So I see you pretty often there as well. So
that's great.
It's the Bay Area is a pretty small world.
It is. Now, Vanessa, you are a board observer, and then NEA's Peter Sonsini led the investment, right? I'm curious, just for the audience, what's the difference between a board observer and a board member tactically and day-to-day practice?
It depends. So typically what I see is the board observer is someone who helped either with the financing or as a new partner to the firm. And then they just attend the board meetings, kind of shadowing the board member. They take down any action items and may help drive those to a resolution. And so that's how it actually started. So I worked with Pete on this investment initially. But I would take notes, and instead of driving a resolution, I would just call Dan and be like, hey, why are we focused on this? Or like, you said this, and I don't think that makes any sense. Or you want to fundraise here? Like, I don't believe that you can raise at that price in that quarter based on like your projections. And so I would challenge a lot of things in our follow-up calls before going and like executing. And then we just started, like, it set the foundation for just solving problems together. So sometimes, you know, I'll be like, hey, I'm having this like existential leadership question. And then we'll talk through that for a while. Or, you know, these numbers aren't adding up on product metrics. Let's do a deep dive. So now it's become really, let's figure out and problem solve some of these things together. And then report our findings out to the rest of the board. As we figure them out. I think it's really fun because I get to like be in the trenches and looking at data and trying to like figure out what's happening with Dion. And it's nice that Dion, you can tell me anything if you haven't figured that out. And it doesn't really matter because I'm not technically a voting board member. So that's
great. Well, we have to switch gears here and go to pitch factors. We're almost out of time, but speaking of raising, it looks like you guys raised, Dion, in December. Are you raising again?
Sorry.
Yeah.
Are you raising again?
No, we're not raising. Okay. Actually, always be raising. Yeah.
Always be raising,
you,
right?
You know, but no, we're not raising again. We were super fortunate. We raised our $65 million Series C, announced it in December. I think it's definitely in today's kind of day and age with the markets and recessions and things, it's, you know, I feel pretty blessed and fortunate to be well capitalized and able to, you know, use that to continue to advance the business. So not fundraising, and happy we did.
Well, when you do, drop me a note.
Hey, this is how you find investing,
Matt? Do you have a fund that we don't know about?
No, I don't got that money. I'm a journalist, but I want to put it on the internet.
All right, we'll keep that in mind.
Well, this has been a blast, and you're right. You guys were not rowdy at all. So thank you so much. But we're not done. We still have pitch practice. So in the background, Haya has been talking to three different companies, and we have them all lined up. And I think you're gonna like the first one. We're gonna bring on Rebecca now. Rebecca runs Orange Therapeutics, and they're building a chat therapy service. Rebecca, are you? I see you. Can you turn on your camera and unmute? There you are.
And I'm unmuting myself.
Thank you so much.
Now, can you hear me?
Absolutely. Sound good.
Okay. So first of all, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. So I founded Orange Therapeutics. It's virtual health on demand. So what does that actually mean? We're developing conversational autonomous agents, virtual humans that look like and feel like humans and can deliver conversational behavioral therapy to patients with specific disorders. So what is the problem that we're solving? Right now, you have people that are seeing therapists, let's say people with alcohol use disorder, which incidentally kills 3 million people a year on average. So the person sees the therapist once a week, let's say, and has a course of CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. But what about in the middle of the week at night, they're going to a party and they're afraid that they might binge. The goal is for them to be able to restrain themselves. So they can click on an icon. They will initiate a session with a virtual human that we are developing, a conversational autonomous therapist or CAT, and say, just as they would say to their regular therapist, you know, I'm going to a party tonight and I'm concerned that I might binge. So the virtual human would say to them, well, let's practice drink refusal skills. Now, we're also putting ourselves in the position of being an evidence-based digital therapeutic, which means we will be regulated by the FDA. Right now, there's an emergency use authorization that the FDA believes we fit the parameters of that would preclude us from having to do a randomized controlled trial because of the pandemic and the increase in psychiatric disorders. And we have a top-notch team. So I think my time is up.
Thank you, Rebecca. That was very good. And just for the audience, Rebecca was picked about 30 minutes ago and given really no prep. So that was very good.
Oh, thank you.
All right, Vanessa, let's start with you. Any feedback?
I think it's great. The one thing I would want to understand how many disorders could be addressed with this type of solution, just to give me an idea of the total addressable market.
10. So we are starting with alcohol use disorder. We're also starting with the depression that caregivers of Alzheimer's disease experience. And they, at all hours, you know, at any time, ours is 24/7 remote access. They could feel depressed because the patient that they're dealing with has suddenly regressed further. So in fact, we were one of 16 companies selected by the NIH to get sponsorship of a grant specialist for us to execute a successful NIH STTR application.
Got it.
Okay, great.
And just quick follow-up. Sure. What's your background?
I completed all but one of the courses for the PhD in math at Yale, but I also had a strong computer science undergraduate background. Then unfortunately, family illness necessitated a leave. My advisor passed away and I went to a math conference, and something that someone said, a professor at the conference, was the stimulus for me to start the tech startups. So, and in addition, by the way, to the other markets, the target populations are also substance use disorders such as opioids. But you know, each one would need its own conversational autonomous therapist because the CBT differs from population to population. We have a potential client that has 11 inpatient recovery centers and about a dozen outpatient. They're also very interested in the mental health of 18 to 25 year olds, and we could address that as well.
Great. Dion, any feedback?
Yeah, Rebecca, first of all, amazing what you're doing. I think starting with describing the problem that people face was really powerful, right? It was one of those I listened to it and heard it and I was like, wow, this is really impactful. If this business works, it's going to save a lot of lives and help a lot of people. So I think you did a wonderful job kicking off the pitch. In terms of kind of feedback on the pitch, the immediate questions I have around the end of that pitch were around, one, it sounds like a technologically hard problem, right? So if you're building virtual agents, there's AI, there's, you know, probably some facial recognition, there's a whole bunch of hard tech problems that you have to solve in order to get that right. And so I would have been curious, how far along are you? And
so we, first of all, we're building on an existing coach that people already developed. And I took those people who already worked on the coach. We're endowing the coach with the additional capacity to deliver cognitive behavioral therapy. We're working with the Stanford University School of Medicine, Department of Psychiatry, and the NYU Grossman School of Medicine. But we already have those metrics that we could pick up from facial gestures, from head movement, to be able to gauge the emotional valence of the person, of the patient. That we already have in place. And we have already virtual humans with gestures and, you know, seeming very human-like. So the main thing that we're building, we have top experts in dialogue systems, renowned professors that have done like 400 papers in NLP specifically in this.
Well, that's very good. Rebecca, Dion, let you finish your thoughts there.
Oh, no, she actually answered my question. So really, really good to go. Thank you.
All right. Well, Rebecca, best of luck to you. And please apply next time using the form so we can get you back on with an improved pitch.
Oh, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you also, Vanessa and John. Thank you.
Cheers.
Okay. We have two more. Next one, we have Cheyenne. I'm not going to racism. I don't want to mispronounce your company's name. I see you in the chat here. Cheyenne, can you turn on your camera and unmute? Building an anti-racism education software platform. I love it.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi there.
How
Hi,
do you pronounce
everyone.
Your company name?
Erasism.
That's perfect.
Yeah, you did great.
All right, great. Well, you have 2 minutes starting now.
Perfect. Hi, everyone, and welcome. My name is Cheyenne Fernanda. I'm the CEO and creative director of Furno Technologies, and I come from a background of UX design in the fintech industry. And I'm also the founder of an early stage startup titled Erasism. We're essentially a gamified sensitivity training platform, and our focus is on anti-racist education. So basically, in my honors year of university, I actually came up with the concept, and we're a safe space community. And my finding was basically that people are very uncomfortable talking about the race conversation or race issues in general. So personal insight was that the Black Lives Matter really propelled this entire conversation forward. And I'm from South Africa. So it also came it actually was a massive movement here as well. And my main finding was that it's not up to people of color to basically educate other people on the sensitivity surrounding the conversation. So the objective of our app was to streamline the process of educating people around the race conversation by making it kind of like a Duolingo, but for educational purposes for race and inclusion on a deeper level. So it's comprised of an app that teaches daily interaction training on microaggressions, on the current buzzwords that everyone should kind of know. And it positions the person or the aim was at universities and companies of all sizes to basically subscribe to the platform. And then from there, have an onboarding process to have their staff kind of educate themselves on the topic. Before starting. So we had a few options. We had an inclusion keyboard as part of the suite, as well as a Chrome extension that diversifies your search results to put people of color at the top of the search result, just because by default, a lot of our interfaces are inherently biased, but not to anyone's fault. So at the moment, we're at our pre-seed or launching phase, and I'm seeking Series A soon. But I thought I'd share, and thanks so much for the opportunity.
Man, I love your passion. That's great. Fantastic. Dion, let's start with you this time.
Awesome. First of all, thanks for joining us and amazing company. The first thing that came to mind for me was actually competitive landscape in that I especially now with, you know, the everything going on, there are a lot of companies kind of in that compliance space. I can think of folks like Athena and others. Have you found that you're seeing other companies do this, competition, or are you finding that you're one of the first folks to do this?
So I actually dedicated my thesis to the entire topic. And I found that we are kind of the first company doing this from what I know. I mean, there are other African initiatives doing it, but I can't remember the name of it, but specifically in Africa, whereas South Africa is quite a different market. But the plan was actually for me to launch in the States just because of your issues and our issues. So I think my current goal is actually to find an investor on that side to see who would be interested, because I think right now we are kind of the first to market. So kind of pushing the feel on sure. it would be a good idea.
I want to jump in here. Now, Dion, if this is true that she's the first one, would you include that in the pitch?
This is actually interesting territory, because you get different problems when you're in a really competitive market. You have a whole bunch of people wondering, like, you know, why are you going to crack this and nobody else? When you're very few in a market, you have to answer the question, okay, why hasn't anybody done this yet? And is this going to be a big enough market, right? Because now there's less comparables. And so you actually get one of two kind of lesser two evils. They're not sure which. So then I would include that in the pitch. I would actually try to find others, or even if it's not directly tied to what you're doing, I would try to find other companies in a similar space with a similar attack pattern, so to speak, right? Market penetration pattern, and show how successful they are. So I mentioned at the top of my head, I don't know, I'm sure I saw this in the news somewhere, but like an Athena raising, right? Like that starts to actually be helpful if you can draw not necessarily competitors, but corollaries to your business and show that these are successful businesses. Here's why there might be a wave of this coming, and us being the first in this world means we're going to have, you know, an advantage, but you can see how other people have done it in similar worlds. Vanessa, I'm seeing similar.
Yeah. I was instantly thinking of like, she should draw parallels to Athena, because they're in compliance training and they're growing very rapidly. And so you can show that there's appetite for this, for new age, you know, training. And you can also say that the apps that preceded you in consumer, like the Duolingos and stuff, like really set the tone for people with these like micro learning moments. And then in the enterprise, it's carried over, and there's some examples of these companies getting big and growing quickly that way.
Yeah.
This awesome. Is great. All right.
Thank you. I had so much fun. Thanks so much for letting me pitch.
All right, Cheyenne. Best of luck to you, and keep in touch.
Thanks so much, guys.
All right. We have one more, and it's quite a switch of companies. So I'm going to bring on Ali now. Ali, I'm not going to try to pronounce your last name, but your company name is Plasmos. I guess you're building a space tugboat company?
That's correct. Hi, my name is Ali Bakhchisaro. My last name was Russian. They turned it to English. That's why it's been a journey. But yeah, thanks for letting me pitch here. It was actually very interesting feeling to pitch in such a short time. I'm originally from Iran, so I want to start with my introduction. I've built about 200 engines. I always envied Americans in high school, where they, you know, blew off rockets, and I was like, I want to do the same. I actually blew myself off twice. After that, built another engine. So I didn't really stop doing that. Started doing the same again just a couple of months ago. 3 months ago, I moved to the United States, and what I'm really doing is to build a reusable tug. What do I mean by that? Is the same thing that the SpaceX did to build a reusable rocket that they launched to space and bring back their systems to launch again. We want to build the same thing, but from space to further orbits. So meaning we get on a SpaceX or other launch programs, we launch from there to deliver, you know, for the last mile services. That is actually really hard these days, and many companies are competing with us on this, mainly impulse space, to deliver for the last mile, but we intend to bring a spacecraft back on the Earth, landed, controlled in a controlled way, and launched that one more time. So that's basically what my company is doing. I can say a little bit more about the team, because it's a team to brag about. Former CEO of Airbus Defence and Space joined us recently as a chairman. I've been adoring the work he has done in Airbus. I used to work for Airbus for a little bit as well. And Richard Wirs, who is a, you know, namely person in Jet Propulsion Laboratory of NASA, joined us as a chief scientist recently as well. The market that we are entering is getting bigger and bigger. So since 1957, the number of satellites from a couple has been increased to 1,670 last year. And this is expected to increase by 3 times over the next years. And our solution to it is to just reuse it the same way SpaceX did so.
Great. Thank That's you. Fantastic. Now I love this because I don't think either one of you two are space rocket experts. So you are, Dion. All right.
I'm just kidding. I tried.
No, but the feedback on the pitch, it would be great. Because you don't have to get nitty gritty. So give us some feedback. Let's start with Dion again.
No, I think it was just a really cool pitch. And so when you can capture people's imagination about emerging technology, I actually have invested in a space company for what it's worth. Exactly. But if you can capture people's imagination and I think Sam Altman talks about this, but it's like easier to build a very hard company than it is to build an easy company, as weird as that sounds. And what I mean by that is when you have a big kind of audacious goal, it's easier to capture imagination. And it sounds like you have a team that's pretty credible. And so in the end, you're going to be able to attract, you know, investors, talent, that sort of thing. So I think the pitch was really good. And I was actually waiting at the end to hear about the team. So I'm glad you snuck that in there, because again, with any really hard problem, you just get this weird credibility barrier where investors are like, really, you're going to build rocket ships? And you just got to be like, no, I am. And this is how I do it. Anyway, that's my feedback. So I think it was just a really well-made pitch, and it's in the 2-minute time span was definitely the kind of pitch that's like, all right, I want to hear more, that you've kind of done that job.
I appreciate it. That's actually great to hear, just because, you know, we pivoted the company, we started doing plasma propulsion only. So I actually practiced my pitch just last week at a TechCrunch party, and I started at the beginning of the party, it was terrible. And by the end of it, I was like, SpaceX, we are doing this, next orbit, done, back. And they were like, okay, who am I pitching next? I was like, party is over. Okay, let's go.
For what it's worth, that is how I prepared for Disrupt, Vanessa.
I'm ready.
I love that. And I think for really, as Dion said, really technical, like frontier tech type of technology, what I find is the pitches tend to be like very lengthy before you even get to like, it's like, this is how it works. And these are all the pieces and all the components. And I'm like, what are you building though? Right. And so getting
the last pitch, exactly. That's exactly the problem we were facing in our last pitch, because it was like combining two different engines, didn't work.
yeah, but I think practicing your pitch at a party, or you know, at a investor speed dating or whatever, where you get to like say the same thing a million times over and over again, you start refining it and you change it, tweak it, and by the end of it, it's great. And so I think I'm glad you had that experience. But very few founders actually get the opportunity or think that it's necessary, or may feel silly repeating themselves 100 times over. But the truth is, in every like aspect of life, practice makes perfect, and getting as many reps in as possible, especially for a very technical product, yeah, is really helpful.
My LinkedIn tag is to stay foolish to stay hungry. So that's kind of what I'm doing.
That's great. And I'm glad you established the credibility of your team, to Dion's point, because without it, like I mentioned earlier when we were talking about Dion's pitch, which was, why is this the team that can solve this problem? And you're making a huge bet on the team once you believe that the problem is solvable.
Would you, Vanessa, would you advise to put the team comment further up in the pitch?
100%. Because the minute you were like, I am launching stuff into space, and you know, I was like, you and
there's like a credibility gap a little bit until you hear it, then you're like, you kind of pull back and then you're like, okay, I get it.
Yeah, unless like I get that you blew yourself into space and stuff, but you know, unless you were actually had like a very tenured career in space, you'd want to surround yourself with great advisors or great team members right off the bat.
Yeah, that's actually great advice. I'm going to use that tomorrow in the next investor.
Great. Fantastic. And now, like, make sure you apply again. I'd love to hear the pitch once it's refined again.
Of course, I would love to.
Thank you so much. Dion, it was wonderful. Vanessa, thank you so much. And even Ali, it was great to have you guys on this episode. So please apply next week. And then next week, we're, of course, switching platforms to GRIP. So once you register once, you'll be registered for them all. And look for that announcement on TechCrunch.com. So once again, thank you for all the guests, and we'll see you next time.
Hey, Matt. We also have these stickers we made of Dion. So, you know.
Oh, I love them.
Oh, how did you get that? Yeah.
I have friends at Forethought, Dion. Oh. That's how I got it. We have all these great stickers.
All right.
That's great.
I thought the deck was cringeworthy. Our stickers. Actually, they're pretty well designed. I just like, why?
No. Those things are better designed than your first pitch deck.
Yeah. Like I said, we hired a marketer.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to cut you guys off. Thank you so much, guys.
Yeah.
Thank you. Good to see you.